This is Dee Blick. Welcome to Lead Well, Live Well for UK Health Radio. Hello and a warm welcome to Lead Well, Live Well with me, Dee Blick, your hostess for today. And I'm recording for UK Health Radio, the world's biggest talk health radio station. Now, on the show today, I have nothing short of a remarkable woman. In fact, I look up to her in many ways. She's one of these women that she tears up the rule book if she doesn't think the rules are fair or if she doesn't see that they are driven by integrity. She has this thread of always wanting to do better in any project that she's involved in. She has so many accolades, it's not true. She's written a best-selling book. She's founded networking groups and awards, and most recently an app. And she just goes about it with no fuss whatsoever. If anything, you sort of get to know her from her achievements rather than what she's boasting or saying about them. She's probably one of the most humble women I have ever met in the face of such incredible achievements. Welcome to today's show, Debbie Gilbert.
Wow, Dee Blick, what an intro. Thank you. That was lovely.
It's my pleasure. And I just wanted really to start, I guess the first question is, you've got this incredible track record in business. You've founded awards, networking groups, a best-selling book, and so on. I mean, can you just talk me through your early career before you stepped into this very public space?
So my early career, very first job ever, was working on customer services at British Gas when it was a public company. So if you can do a year working at British Gas, you can work anywhere.
Wow.
Dealing with all the service breakdowns. And from there, I went to a company called Wonder Foods. Some of you may know the drink, the Ovaltine. And I worked in marketing there for a few years. And then my boss, I used to book loads of trips for my boss to go away to Switzerland. And I ended up being offered a job to work for the travel company that we booked the flights through. And that started off a very long career in travel. Finally ending up in the last sort of few years of my career working in what's called medical repatriation, which is dealing with people who are sick and injured abroad on their insurance and bringing them home early or later than was planned. And I think those early years working at British Gas dealing with stressed out people really stood me in good stead with that. Then I had a child in 1994. And there was no such thing as flexible working in those days. And I did go back to work for a couple of years, but found it really difficult. Had a marriage breakdown as well. And it all culminated in me leaving at the end of 1996, beginning of 97, relocating back up to Hertfordshire, because I was actually living in South London at the time. And we received the devastating diagnosis that my dad had dementia at the age of 56. So that led me to start my own business, which, as you can appreciate, back then, there was no internet. The internet didn't exist. It was all emerging. Websites didn't exist. Yeah. Neither did social media. So I was working for a friend's husband's plumbing company doing his marketing, which revolved around local leaflets and press, you know, newspaper ads and all of that. And he asked me to go to a BNI meeting, which I did, and ended up working for a number of local tradesmen, supporting them. So that's how my marketing business started back in 1998.
That is incredible. I mean, often it's never just this completely smooth path that leads us to where we are actually meant to be, isn't it? Like with your dad and then moving and your marriage breakdown. And it's, I always find it really heartening that in the jaws of adversity, we're able to get some form of a semblance of an idea of what we want to do moving forwards. Just for the sake of our listeners, can you just explain what BNI is?
So BNI is a global networking company. They have groups all over the world. And I think they really were the sort of start of, you know, networking groups. I think the way society evolved, you know, in the old days, people would meet in the pub or the women would meet down at the sort of coffee, you know, have a coffee or whatever. And of course, over time, we became sort of a very dispirited society, I think. And I think Ivan Meisner, who started BNI, is an American guy, and he brought it over to the UK. I think his concept was to get maybe 30 people in a room, all from different professions, working together to try and support one another and gain each other leads. And that was my first experience of networking. And yeah. It honestly gave me really good foundation.
You know, it's interesting listening to you talking about, obviously I didn't know that you'd really sort of launched through BNI, but it was exactly the same with me, that I was working in big businesses, decided because of the kids to start my own business, just for the flexibility that I could work late into the night, but I could pick them up from school. And BNI really started my business. I've actually still got a client 20 years down the line that I'm working with today. And I can remember that feeling of going into that room and networking and not knowing what would happen. And then before I knew it, my order book of clients began to build up. And I want to now talk a bit about networking, because you are you're not just a phenomenal networker, but you actually founded your own hugely successful networking group, Business Women Unlimited. And I want you to really walk me through your why. Why did you do it, and how it's fared?
So I'm quite proud of the fact that I was the very first person in the whole of the UK to set up a networking group at 9:30 in the morning. So whenever I see anyone that's doing groups at that time, I always think, well, that came from me. So at the time, let's go back again, back in 2011, there were networking groups at lunchtime and in the first thing in the morning, 6 a.m. But there was an increasing number of women who had set up businesses because the bar to entry became much lower. It became quite easy to set up a business because the way that the internet had moved so fast, people could set up a business overnight if they wanted to. It was so easy. But these women had children at school, and they're, you know, a lot of them at nursery school, where nursery school pickups were at sort of 12:30. So they were not being served. And lots of women were coming to me saying, oh, I'd love to come to your lunchtime networking, because I had 13 groups at the time, but I have to pick up my child, so I can't. And also the other problem was they didn't have the money for memberships. They just didn't, you know, they were investing some money into setting up a business, things like maybe their website, maybe some business cards, maybe other things. But to actually have to pay for a networking membership on top was another barrier to them. So I sat down for a coffee with an accountant one day, and she was experiencing the same problem. Lots of women were coming to her for help. So we literally just sat there and said, well, let's set something up. So the very first one we did it via word of mouth. We didn't really advertise it anywhere. And 45 people showed up.
Wow.
And then the second one, we had 65. So we decided, wow, we need to actually get people signing up beforehand. And it was originally called Mums Unlimited, but I rebranded it in 2022 to Business Women Unlimited, because I think that women don't really necessarily nowadays want that label of mumpreneur anymore. They don't want to be seen as a mum in business. They want to be seen as a woman in business. So yeah, that's how I changed it.
I mean, Debbie, that is one heck of a thing to sit down with your accountant and have an idea and then to implement it and get that huge turnout. And where is Business Women Unlimited now?
So we've got 11 groups. I didn't franchise it deliberately. The people who run the groups are business women themselves. It's my philanthropic thing. I don't do it for profit. I do it because I want to support those other women on their journey. And I decided very early on that's what it would be, because there is no membership. They pay as they go. We offer a full program over 12 months of different topics every single meeting that they come to. There's a proper structure. It's not like throw a load of people in for a coffee. There's a proper structure. My group leaders are fully supported and they feel part of my team, and they get paid a small amount for running the group. And as long as the groups cover their costs, which they do, I'm happy to continue with that. And we run our own in-house awards called the Shining Stars every year. And we also run a big event at Christmas where we get sort of around 100 people to that.
That is just an astonishing thing. And I also, I mean, you're a really smart businesswoman. We've known each other for quite a long time now. But I really respect the fact that you said this is a philanthropic initiative. And I so identify with that. It's the same place that I come from, where I will mentor people at no charge, because I can see that there's a need for it. And I think, you know, good on you for you found a gap in the market for mums. You then rebranded it. You're there to nurture and support your leaders and your members. I find with all the things that you're doing, that's quite an astonishing thing to do. And whereabouts in the UK are the groups based?
So we've got two down here in Somerset, and then we've got St Albans, Hemel Hempstead, Watford, Enfield, Whitstable in Kent, and we have our online group as well. So people can access it wherever they are. So the online group, we've had people from America, people from Europe come along, and there's no membership. So they can just book on a meeting and come along. And we run the online one quarterly because we found we get more people to that. And we do it on the topic of collaboration. So the whole point is that people come to the meeting to talk about who do they want to collaborate with, who do they want to work with. And, you know, we all dive into our little black books and support each other with that. So it's a proper structured meeting, but it gives people the opportunity to reflect and think about collaboration and think about the types of businesses they want to work with.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you definitely need structure, and it's making me think I must attend. I mean, presumably I can attend an online, I'm going to be attending an online meeting, because I love the sound of it. And all the years I've known you, I didn't even realize that, which just goes to show. Now we're actually coming up to a short break, so please don't go away, because after the break I'm going to be talking with Debbie about a subject that is close to both of our hearts, and that's about authentic awards and why we both want to stand out. In particular, Debbie, who's the expert at this, we want to stand out as being really integrity driven.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving. It's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage, or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to Lead Well, Live Well with me, Dee Blick. And in the studio today, I have got the fabulous Debbie Gilbert. Now, Debbie, something that I know you bang the drum for is about integrity-driven, authentic awards. And you have quite strong views on many of the awards that seem to be littering the landscape today. So before we talk about your awards, I really want you to share your thoughts about awards, business awards in general, what you see happening, and really what drove you to do something completely different.
So the awards landscape has become a very murky pond, as I describe it. It's become this thing where, you know, I could have 10 awards by tomorrow, dear, if I wanted them, because all I'd have to do is send a payment for those awards to receive them. They're not properly judged. There are awards out there that require you to get voting, and I'm really against voting. And I'm against voting because that becomes a popularity contest. But it's also a lead collector for the organizer. So they're collecting all of this email data. And of course, they're going to use that to spam people. So you're begging your friends and family and business associates to vote for you. Where's that data going? Of course, they're collecting it. So I'm really against voting. I'm against these emails that you receive telling you you've won the best marketeer in Horsham. Sign on the dotted line here. £500, thank you very much. And I'm against these websites that you can just click on, fill in a few details, and it will send you an award. So I'm all for properly judged awards that have a transparent judging panel made up of business experts.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. I think we've spoken about this before. In fact, I think when I came on your podcast, it was talking about awards. And I think I shared with you that just recently I received an email saying to me that I had won an award. And my first reaction is cynicism. How have I won this award? And that if I wanted my name to be emblazoned on some fabulous building in America, all I had to do was reply back and they'd go through the process. And my first reaction was, how much? When I was told it would be £1,000, I thought, yep. And that was for the quote unquote admin fee. So I'm really with you on that. I've won several awards in my career. None of them I've entered for. I've found out afterwards when they've written to me and said, it was best book of the year for two really good book awards. And one was for the Guardian newspaper for my book being sort of number one in the top. It was the number one book for entrepreneurs. And I found out because they just messaged me. And I'm really with you on that. But I think, Debbie, there's a huge chasm between. I don't really like the way that awards are meted out. You're cynical, and I get that. There's a big difference between that and then launching your own awards. We can all sit on the side and go, I really don't like that. I'm not taking part in that. I can see I'm going to have to pay a whacking great fee. But you went and did something completely different. What made you decide to launch your own awards?
So back then, when I set up the Best Business Women Awards, these fake awards weren't really around. What motivated me to set up my awards was I won an East of England Business Champion Award in 2014. And when I looked at the photographs afterwards, there were only three women on the stage. And I thought to myself, well, this is not right. And I got chatting to quite a few women about why weren't they entering awards. And there weren't huge numbers of awards around then. I mean, this is like 12, 13 years ago. And they were all like, oh, well, I don't really feel good enough. And I was like, well, you are good enough. And then I sat back and reflected and thought, what awards are out there for women? And at the time, there was the Verve Clicquot Awards, which are amazing. And there was the lovely Every Woman Awards. But they're very much aimed at women running multi-million pound businesses. And most women don't run a multi-million pound business because they're juggling family. So I just decided I'd set up my own national awards for women. And it's lovely because there are so many more of those women awards out there now. Some are not great, but some are brilliant. And I'm happily champion other people's awards if they've got a credible process. And then I think that lots of people along the way started to think, oh, this could be a moneymaker. Oh, you know, why don't I set up an award and just tell people they've won it and get the money in? So I think that was the rise of the fake awards or vanity awards, whatever you want to call them, a few years ago. And then people saw them as list building exercises, which, you know, as I said earlier, I'm really against. So I think my main motivation at the time was to see women being recognised. And now, all these years down the line, I launched the Best SME Awards last year, which are mixed awards, not women only, because a lot of men were coming up to me at my awards saying, oh, this is amazing the way you do it. I love it. And why don't you open it up to men? And I said, well, because it's got Best Business Women above the door. I think you're missing the point there. And basically, I decided I was driven to set up another credible awards because there are a lot of really bad awards out there.
I agree, they are. And I think there's a couple of things that I really liked about what you were sharing there. One is that this philanthropic streak is really evident in what you do. And I think when you're driven, it doesn't mean to say we can't, of course we want to make money, we've got bills to pay, we want to profit from our passion. But I like the fact that the thread I'm seeing as you're chatting to me is this philanthropy, but it's also seeing a gap in the market to do something different and to do something better. And I wanted to pick up on when you commented about multi-million pound businesses, because I feel the same as you with the people that I work with, the businesses, that you can have a really successful business, you can be happy where you are, but if you haven't got a multi-million business, you're somehow overlooked because you're not credible enough, you're not serious enough. And I really, really like the fact that you identified that there was this massive group of women and subsequently men that were not being served by the awards that are currently available. And I want to just chat a bit more now about the best SME awards, because I've noticed recently, you did them just, was it a few weeks ago? And the number of people that are sharing how thrilled they are to have won your awards, to me shows how valued and valuable the best SME awards are. I think there's about at least four or five people that entered that were sharing lovely photographs. So can you just paint a picture before the next break of the best SME awards? Because I'm sure that listening to this, to our show today, will be the most amazing people that are thinking, oh, I'd love to find out more about that. So tell me a bit more about the best SME awards.
So the biggest differentiator is the fact that if you are selected as a finalist in our awards, that you win a silver, a gold, or a special recognition award. So everybody leaves with a trophy. There are no other awards that do that.
Yeah.
And the other differentiator, I think, really, where we're concerned is that if you don't come to the final, you're not disqualified.
Wow, that's a big one.
It's massive. And yes, from a financial point of view, as an award organiser, that is not a great business strategy. However, for me, it's all, everything I do is rooted in ethics. And if you have a proper judging process and you select people, how can you then say to them, you're disqualified because you don't buy a ticket? How ridiculous is that? Because there are people out there who are neurodiverse that do not want to sit in a room of 300 people. So the existing award programs out there preclude them. There are people out there who are disabled or who can't make a long trip to an award ceremony. So I decided at the very start of my journey that I would never do that to anybody. And, you know, yeah, we get around, I would say last week we did, we had 77 finalists and we had 54 in the room. So, you know, we had just over 20 people that didn't come, but they got their trophies and they got their recognition. They were still up on the screen on the night. They're still in the program. It's like they're there, but they're not there. And we did a live stream on Facebook so they could watch it. So that's my two differentiators, really, is that we don't disqualify people and we give everybody an award.
Wow. I think as a marketer, you need to make more of that. That really has, I found that quite fantastic. And for myself, I don't broadcast it, but I really don't like being in huge, noisy crowds. Yeah. I've got tinnitus and my tinnitus gets kicked off. And I know there's an awards scheme coming up that I'm going to have to attend it. My book's made it through to the finals. And I'm dreading the sound because it will trigger my tinnitus, which means all I hear is hissing and buzzing. So I just love the fact that you have been so thoughtful in putting these awards together. Now, we're now coming to the next break. Again, don't go away, because I'm going to be chatting to Debbie a bit more about awards, and I want to know more about Debbie Gilbert, the author. Back in a moment.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
What if your worst dreams aren't your enemy?
Falling, cheating, being chased, naked, drowning, losing teeth. What if I fail? What if something goes wrong? I'm Teresa Chung, dream expert, best-selling author, and co-host of The Healing Power of Your Dreams. And in my latest title, Extreme Dreaming, I reveal a powerful truth. There are no bad dreams.
They feel so real, but that's so you remember them.
They're messages, signals, transformative gifts guiding you toward clarity.
Click on the Extreme Dreaming discount banner link on UK Health Radio homepage and learn to decode even your darkest dreams.
Extreme Dreaming.
Are you ready to listen?
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Hello and welcome back to Lead Well, Live Well with me, Dee Blick, and the lovely Debbie Gilbert, who's in the studio today talking about her journey to found networking groups and awards. I mean, Debbie, you don't do things by halves, do you?
No.
You know, I get the, you really throw yourself in to everything that you do. And I just think before I talk about Debbie, the author, and also I want to find out if somebody wants to enter your awards, what is the process? You know, what fuels you? Because you're doing a heck of a lot of projects. Is it are you very self-motivated? Are you very determined? What is underpinning everything that you do?
Yeah, I am very driven and I'm very self-motivated, and I am always keen to help and support people, because I know that's what we all need, is encouragement and support. And I guess I get a buzz out of it. I mean, people say to me, oh my God, it must be such a lot of work doing an event for 300 people, and I'm now doing it twice a year. But, you know, I absolutely love it and I completely thrive on it. And I couldn't be prouder at the end of an award ceremony, because I know the difference those trophies are going to make to people. And it is so much more than holding a trophy.
Yeah.
So I know it's going to catapult their business. And that gives me a huge amount of pride.
Yeah, well, I get it completely. And I just want us to go back a bit to the Best SME Awards and the Best Business Women Awards. How can somebody put themselves in the running for receiving an award while also being judged to receive?
Yeah, so the Best Business Women Awards is open until the 10th of June, 2026. That is, you apply online, you complete your form, you upload evidence for the things that you mention in your entry. And we have videos and resources to help people complete it properly. And then the Best SME Awards will open again later this year. And that will be open probably till January, February next year. Haven't sorted the dates out yet, but it'll probably be sort of early Feb that will close. And so the two ceremonies are in April and October. So at the moment, I'm just sorting venues and things out for next year to clock in my dates. So that's, again, it's online. So you go on, you complete your entry form. But I'm actually working with a software developer at the moment to develop my own awards software, because what I've identified out there is that a lot of small awards are run really badly. And that's because the current award software that's out there is sort of around £2,000 a year, which is a lot of money for a very small awards. Yeah. So what I want to do is create some software to help these small awards do it properly and make it more affordable. So I'm working with a software company at the moment doing that.
Why am I not surprised about this? And I was just thinking when you were talking there that, of course, you contributed to my current book, You're the Best, about personal branding, and you were actually the MC for my book launch. You were just fantastic. And something that I wanted to touch on is your thoughts on fear of failure, because you wrote a cracking few pages in my book about fear of failure. And I just wondered if you'd share some of your thoughts on that with our lovely listeners.
If you don't try, you're never going to know. And I never think of a word failure. It just doesn't exist in my vocabulary. I always think whatever happens in your business and in your life, you learn from it. As to me, there's no such thing as failing at anything. There's things that perhaps don't go as well as you'd hoped. But generally, when you pull back the layers, there's reasons why those things don't work out. So, for example, if when I'd launched the Best Business Women Awards, it was all a risk. But I de-risked it as much as possible by speaking to a venue and saying, look, if I don't get any entries, I won't be able to go ahead. Would you be able to hold the date for me? But because I've built such a solid network of people and trust out there, people were willing to bet on me. So the venue were like, yeah, sure, you know, we'll hold the date for you without payment. I went out to people and said, would you sponsor? And they were like, yeah, of course we'll sponsor. So I got all of this stuff together and then did a launch event. And you know, you sit back and hope that everybody who's registered for the launch event shows up, because I did it for free. And I had 90 to 100 people in the room. And I sat there and thought, I'm going to do this. This is going to work. But then you have to get the entries in, so that you have that anxiety, if you like, for it. But if you know that you've done everything you possibly can to make something work, then it should work. And if it doesn't, you have to peel back the layer and say, well, why didn't that work? Was my marketing off? Was the messaging off? What, you know? So I think fear of failure just doesn't exist in my vocabulary. It's just, if it doesn't work this way, then you need to try it a different way. And yeah, sometimes you just have to accept whatever project it is that you perhaps want to launch, or product or service or whatever it is, just maybe isn't right for the market, and you have to refine it.
That is so powerful. I mean, what I'm getting from that is that you're entrepreneurial, but you're also very practical, that you do, you've got this vision, which I see comes strongly through you. You have this vision, you have this philanthropic streak, and then you couple that with being practical. And that's why I advise as a marketer, it's very much, let's look at what we're taking on. What are the barriers in the way? What are the risks? And then we do, we try our hardest, as you say, to de-risk, which I absolutely thrive on as a marketer. And I think what I'm getting from that is that if you have that level of the sort of philanthropic streak, the practicality, the de-risking, the likelihood is that because you're being, this is the saber, devil is in the detail, but because you're also looking at the detail, there's much less chance of that not going ahead, because you've done your homework. Mm-hmm. And I try and do that with the entrepreneurs that I work with. We will spend quite a while on their marketing plan, and then it's very much about, right, let's crack on now and do it. So it's really great to hear you sharing that, because some people think there's like a magic, there's an alchemy there, or you've got to be a certain type of person to be successful. But listening to you, it's like, I can see why you are successful. You're driven by this streak of integrity, this desire to do better, to be better. But you also put the hard yards in, which is so important, and that you accept that if you do feel a bit uncertain, that's okay. We're going to put lots of effort into this, and if it doesn't work out, we'll have a pretty good idea of why. And I really respect that in you. And I just want to talk now about Debbie Gilbert. There are so many things we could talk about today, and writing your questions was like herding cats. I was thinking, there are so many things that I can ask this woman, but we've only got so much time. And I really don't want to deprive my listeners of your journey as an author, because I have to share that I was working with your lovely brother, Steve, on a marketing project. He was one of the nicest, fairest marketing managers that I've had the pleasure of working with as a freelancer. And he was saying to me, you've got to meet my sister, Debbie. You know, you'll really get on with her. And then he said, and Debbie's writing a book. And that was how you and I met, wasn't it? We met in a pub over a soft drink and a coffee. And you wanted to know about being an author. And I was, as I always am, I was really happy to share ideas with you. And so let's deep dive on that a bit now and talk about Debbie Gilbert, the author, and how your book writing journey panned out.
Oh, you were just amazing. Working with you was the best thing that ever happened to me. I'd spent quite a lot of money with different book coaches, and I was a bit all over the place. And I think I'd written about 20,000 words when I sat down with you. And you gave me such invaluable advice, which I went on to implement in my book. And it sold copies globally. It was amazing. I was getting emails from people in Australia, Poland, India. It was incredible. And the book did so well for many, many years. And it's still on Amazon, but I mean, it was 8 years ago now. So I'm in the process of writing a new one, which is dropping because it's called The Successful Mumpreneur. And I think it's a title that actually women don't want anymore. They don't want to be identified as a mumpreneur. So yeah. I've had to accept that. So the new book won't have mumpreneur in the title, but the actual format of the book is rooted in the advice that you gave me, and the new book will be rooted in that as well. So I'm actually writing two books. One about the impact of awards, and the other book will be a revision to The Successful Mumpreneur, which would, of course, be called Business Women Unlimited.
Wow, that's fantastic. So,
yeah.
So, and how can I ask, just so I wanted to share with you that I went to the London Book Fair with my little media past recently. And what seems to be coming out loud and strong is that when we're in the non-fiction book space, people seem to be preferring books that are not long, really like sort of 80,000 word counts. And I just wondered if that's something, what sort of word count is your book? How are you reaching your audience?
They're both going to be around 40,000 words, I think, for a non-fiction book. I think that's a good sweet spot. Both featuring stories. I think people love to read stories about other entrepreneurs. And obviously all the information in The Successful Mumpreneur is really good content about how to set up a business and get your business off the ground. But 8 years ago when it was published, AI wasn't a thing. Online networking wasn't a thing. So the pandemic's changed lots of things, the way we work. And I also think, you know, AI needs to be talked about in the book. So I'm, you know, a lot of the stories will be replaced with new stories and some of the content updated, but some of the content is still very relevant today that's in there. So I'm not planning to rewrite the whole thing. Some of it will just be updated, but the structure is what people loved, which came from you. And that was one of the big things people commented on, that the way I did it was on a business journey. So therefore, if people were further down the journey, they could skip three chapters if they wanted to and go ahead. And then I'm also quite proud that I ghost wrote another successful book called She Can Prosper, with a lady called Diane Watson, using, again, your formula of the way you broke it down with stories. And I also contributed to the book Winner and another book called Fab Collab. I wrote a whole chapter about collaboration. So I'm a bit like you, you know, I love writing. It's just getting the time to sit and do it is the problem.
Yeah, it is. And can I ask, are you self-publishing this?
Yes.
I think... Obviously, as I'm an inveterate writer, I think I was born with writing in my DNA. It's what I strongly cling to out of all the skills that I've got. And so for me, a day without writing is just not even on the cards. I have to write every single day. And I think it's just fabulous and fascinating that the thread that's running through this interview is you find a gap. Mm. You're a woman who finds a gap. And you think, you look into it, think, can I do something here? Can I add value? Can I make it more integrity driven? Mm. And then you actually go ahead and you do it. And I just wonder, in terms of, we talk about juggling, and I don't think I've got a good work-life balance. There are times it's all work, very little balance. I can work 12 hours. As you know, I'm producing a magazine at the moment, and that can see me working till midnight. But given you've got all these commitments, how do you find balance in your life so that you can live well as lead well?
Oh, dear. This is where the whole interview falls to pieces. I am absolutely rubbish at work-life balance because my work is my life. It's my vocation. It's what I live for. And I work very long hours. I work weekends. I don't really do a lot of separation. I think as well, the other issue is I moved to Somerset 3 years ago. So I don't have really a lot of friends here. My family are scattered all over. You know, my son lives in Thailand and my other son lives in Bristol. So I just absorb myself in my work, but I actually enjoy it. I don't see it as a toil or an issue. I love what I do. So, you know, yeah, my work-life balance isn't great. I do go to the gym twice a week and I go to Zumba in my village. And I try and go to networking events because I think it breaks up breaks up my week. And my husband and I go out for a walk together most days, even if it's just around the village. And we belong to Ford Abbey, which is just up the road from where we live, which is beautiful. And we go up there probably about once a week. We have a membership there so we can just come and go as we please.
Oh, do you know, I was quite reassured listening to you, because I recently write an article. I'm the commissioning editor of Sussex Exclusive, and every month I write a column where I take the mick out of myself. I just enjoy talking about parts of my life and my character that are really quite funny. And I think I wrote recently about, I set up this scenario of a journalist interviewing me, and it was all about what I do in my spare time. So I was just poking fun at myself in the article and just saying that, you know, what are my hobbies? Well, like you, I enjoy walking, but then I said, to the shops or to the nearest coffee bar, or we're like part of the National Trust, we'll go to a lovely house with grounds around it. But I'm very much like you, and there's that ubiquitous phrase that if you love what you do, it will never feel like a day of work again. Mm-hmm. And I'm exactly the same as you, that because I love what I do, I get up, I love writing, I like you as well, I really enjoy shaking things up and being a positive disruptor, which is what you are. I like saying, I don't think this is fair, let's do it in a better way, let's be more inclusive and welcoming. So I'm really glad I didn't realize that about you. I'm so pleased that you've said that, because sometimes I think I'm just an oddity in the way I work. I'll work till midnight happily. Mm. You know, I'll be there at midnight editing an article, then up the next morning at 7, but it doesn't feel like work. Now, before we get you to share your motivational quote and your question for me, just tell me briefly, you launched an app called Linear, which I was pleased to support. What was your motivation in developing this, and what is the aim of Linear? Have I got that right, Linear?
Yeah, it's called Linear. So it was a conversation with a client who came to me to want to do some marketing for a project called Being Lean. She's a lean expert, which, for those of you who don't know what that is, in manufacturing, you'll find people who are qualified to make sure the processes that are being done are lean as possible. So saving time, saving money, etc. That's it in a quick nutshell. And she wanted to get people to apply this to their everyday life, seeing that people were wasting time, wasting money on tasks and wasting time doing things could be done better. So she came to me about setting up a membership group on her website. She'd written a book called Being Lean. And I said to her, I'm not being funny, but I think online memberships, I've seen their day, really. And whatever you build, you need to build for the next generation of people. So we had a whole conversation, and I said, you know, maybe you should think about an app. And that was the conversation ended. You know, she'd spent a lot of money with marketing agencies and been really ripped off. And I said, if I'm totally honest, I'm not going to do this, because I don't think it's a good use of your money and time. Anyway, about 2 months later, she came back to me and said she'd been off, she'd done some research, and she thought that there was a really good idea there with an app. Would I be interested in working with her on it on an equity share basis? And I thought, yeah, I would actually. She's very driven. She's very clever. And here we are 18 months later. We are about to launch what's called an MVP, which is a minimal viable product, which is basically the app before it goes to the app store. It's been a huge project getting it built, much bigger than even I imagined it would be. But, you know, we have just been shortlisted for the UK Startup Awards, which I'm absolutely thrilled about that. And that those awards are designed for people at pre-startup, pre-trading, and they have lots of connections with investors. And we've also just finished a 2-month project with the Female Founders Rise Programme, which is an incubator for women who are starting a business.
Gosh, that really is watch this space. Absolutely incredible. And now we're in that part of the show now where I want you to share your motivational quote with me and then share your question. So what's your quote, Debbie?
So my quote is, when you reach the top of your mountain, throw down a rope and help somebody else up.
Oh, that is perfect. Is that one that you've made up yourself?
Mine, yeah. I started sharing it a few years ago. And to me, it just completely encapsulates everything I stand for. Because your mountain is going to be very different to somebody else's mountain. So when you reach your top of your mountain, then you need to throw that rope down and help somebody else up.
Oh, I love that. I really, that is quite profound. And that really sings to my soul, Debbie. I think I'm probably going to nick that, but I will quote you. I will make sure that whenever, I'll probably quote it in future shows as well, because it's the idea that being able to support somebody and help them on their journey is not only intrinsically satisfying, I think it's almost like a fundamental for all of us that when life's good and we get to the top, then bear in mind that there are others that are on a journey, they're not as far ahead as you. So if we can support them, and that seems to be your ethos as a woman, you know, listening to the answers that you've given me today. And I've learned stuff about you that I didn't know, and I've known you for quite a long time. And it's just so heartwarming to hear of successful businesswomen and businessmen that are willing to do that to help others on their journey. And also it's hyacinths for our soul, isn't it? We feel pretty amazing if we've helped somebody on their way.
And if you help others, it will come back to you tenfold.
I couldn't agree more on that. And so we're now at that part of the show where you ask me a question, and I don't know what that question is. So I'm always thinking, oh my goodness me. I always say to my listeners, it's whatever the top of mind answer is, I have to go with, because I just can't afford to dwell on it too much, then start panicking. So what's your question for me?
I'm really interested in your thoughts about networking, and I would love to know what you think makes a really good networking event.
I think what makes for a good networking event, there are two things. One is structure and the other is people. I think that a good event does need some form of structure. If it's just a standing blobs and talk, it can fall apart. So I think there needs to be, as you've said today, you define this great structure that I need to know roughly what I can expect. It might be slightly free when I get there, but I don't want to get there and just think, I mean, just standing talking for an hour, then we sort of slope off. But I think the most important thing is the people, you know, is that a great networking event thrives on people that are there not just to yap about themselves, which I get that, but there's a spirit of conviviality, of camaraderie and of sharing that, and that comes about through, I think, the organizer, that the organizer of an event, that they're going to have to distill that through to the people that are attending, even if it means just reminding people you're going to this event, you know, we're really looking forward to seeing you. But remember, it's not just about you, it's about the people that are coming to the event as well. And for me, a big thing is that reciprocity of sharing. And it might sound daft to say it, but people need to be reminded sometimes before they go to an event that, yes, you can talk endlessly about yourself and get it off your chest, but if you haven't actually listen to that person and ask questions, you're not going to get a conversation going. So it's very much for me, I've been at networking events where I was at one, I must share without naming it, recently, and the person that I was listening, and I say listening because they talked incessantly about themselves for nearly 5 minutes. And at the end of it, I just said, so what do you want to know about me? And they said, oh, well, I think I know probably everything I need to know about you, Dee. And I was thinking, right, that's not good. Now, it doesn't mean to say that even if that person had some kind of a pre-briefing of remember we're here to share, to learn, to connect, that they may have still been like that. But I think the vibe of an event is set by the organizer. And the organizer should be, in my opinion, somebody that people look up to, like you, that's all about we're here to share, we're here to learn, we're here to connect. And if you don't have that stemming down from the organizer, I think that a networking event can fall flat because there's nothing there. So I don't know what you think about that, Debbie. Is that your experience? And
100%. I think that badly organized events never lead very far. And I think I went to one recently in Exeter, and nobody was there to greet me, to introduce me to people. We were just given there was a sign-off sheet at the front and you just ticked your name off. And I walked into this room and there must have been 40 people there. Nobody spoke to me. And I went and got a coffee and ended up chatting to a woman at the coffee because she was also in the same boat as me. And just the whole event was awful. And I would never go back to it because the way it was run. And the way it was run by the organizer, who spent the first 20 minutes talking about himself start of the meeting when he stood up. He talked about himself, his business for a good 20 minutes. And I just felt it was his roadshow, If you're going to advertise it as a networking event, well, then you want to make sure that the people in the room get to speak. Why not just run an event about your business if that's all you want to talk about?
I agree. So I guess we're on the same page with that as we are on so many things. And that just really leaves me to thank you so much.
Thank you.
For joining me today, Debbie. It's been absolutely fantastic. I know you've got to shoot off now, so I wish you well with the rest of the day ahead.
Thank you.
And I know we'll catch up soon. Thank you so much, Debbie Gilbert.
Thank you, Dee. Thank you for inviting me on the show.
So that's the lovely Debbie Gilbert there, sharing her frankly inspiring journey and her ethos as an ethics and integrity driven businesswoman. And what a woman she is. So I just want to leave you with a few thoughts of my own today. But I've recently taken on a business coach, and I felt it was an important move because I'm faced now with some challenging but incredible projects that are really pushing me out of my comfort zone. And the final thought that I want to leave you with today is what my coach said to me is, Dee, you've got to embrace courage over comfort. Now, that really resonated with me, and I hope it resonates with you, because if you're doing something new and daunting, it can be tempting to stay in your comfort zone, to peek your head out, look round the corner, then to go back in. But if you accept that this new project that you're taking on, that it's not going to be comfortable at first, and you have to do what you have to do to get to that point, then knowing that this is okay, I'm bound to feel feelings of fear, of awkwardness, of a sense of trepidation. But if you're like Debbie and you're de-risking and you're backing yourself big time, then you're likely to succeed on your terms. So I have to thank my coach, Laura Osman, for that. I just love that. Courage over comfort. The minute she said that to me, it was like, yep, I get it. So now I just think, you know what, Dee, you're feeling a little bit awkward because this is new. It's a little bit daunting, and that's okay. It's exactly as it should be. So again, as I always say to you, I want you to step into your circle of power, to back yourself big time, and to remind yourself just how brilliant you are, that your best is yet to come, and you are more than enough to get to the top of that mountain. And don't forget, as Debbie said, to throw that rope down and help others. And that's me, Dee Blick, Lead Well, Live Well, and I really look forward to being back and sharing more with you next week.
You've been listening to Lead Well, Live Well on UK Health Radio.